The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning, and welcome to this online worship service with Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, PA. Right now, we are located wherever you are. I'm Ann Rostosky, longtime member and vice president of the board. This morning, I am your worship associate. You are welcome here if you believe in God some of the time, none of the time, or all of the time. Or you just don't know. What matters to us is dialogue informed by openness, respect, and curiosity. What we value is exploration, growth, and ongoing learning, no matter how young or old you may be or feel, no matter how long or short the time you've been attending. Sometimes we can be just as closed-minded or critical as anyone else you might know, including yourself. But just know that those moments are blips on the screen, because we come here to intentionally remind ourselves and each other to keep practicing our best selves. We do believe that there's a love holding us and calling us together into this ever-expanding circle of compassion giving and justice seeking. That is why whomever you love, whatever your gender identity or expression, wherever you are in your life journey or your spiritual journey, there is a place in this circle for you. Welcome. And today our speaker will be Bonnie Nyman, who is a UNISERV representative for the Pennsylvania State Education Association. You might wonder, what does that have to do with Unitarian Universalism? Well, the work of unions ties in with UU principles such as the inherent worth of every person and the democratic process in society at large. And now I will turn it over to Phil Manos, who will light our chalice this morning.
Thank you. Good morning. The reading for this morning's chalice lighting is by the Reverend Florence Kaplow. Reverend Kaplow is a minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Urbana-Champaign in Urbana, Illinois. She is also a writer, editor, and ordained Soto Zen priest. In recognition of Labor Day, we light this flame to honor all work, including the work of our hands and our backs. In gratitude for all the labors that support our world and for all those who boldly continue the work of justice, equity, and peace. As I light the peace lamp, please respond with the words in italics on the screen. May peace be with us and with all the people of the world.
And now we will have our gathering song. It is 109 in our hymnal. Sometimes it's called Bread and Roses, and other times it's called Here We Come Marching, Marching.
A victory! Victory to the miners!
In the beauty of the day, a million darkened kitchens, a thousand mill of scray, are touched with all the radiance that a sudden sun discloses. For the people here are singing bread and roses, bread and roses. As we go marching, marching, we battle too for men, for they are women's children, and we murder them again. Our lives shall not be sweated from earth until life closes. Our soul as well as bodies, give us breath, but give us roses.
Just a little bit more about that song. This particular version was from the film called Pride. And that took place in Wales. And there was a strike of the miners there that lasted from 1984 to 1985. And in London, there is a lesbian and gay group, and they decided to go to support the miners. They formed a group themselves because they figured they were both being not treated well by Margaret Thatcher and her administration. So they decided to join forces. And in that particular song, what you're seeing is the miners and the gay and lesbians meeting for the first time. And it didn't go so well. You know, some of the extreme people from each group didn't really bond well together, but towards the end they were very supportive of one another. And if you haven't seen that movie, it's a really good movie. It's called Pride, and it was made in 2014. So anyway, the next video that you're going to see is our conversation through story, and this is a depiction of a woman called Aunt Molly Jackson, who was active during the Depression. And she was involved with minors. She was the child of a minor. She married minors. And she was a folk singer and a union activist. In this film, she's portrayed by a singer-songwriter called Rosalie Sorrells, who went around and sang a lot of the old folk songs. And she did a really good job. This takes place in Appalachia.
I remember it was the 16th morning of October, 1930. My sister's little girl, Flossie Doolin, was going around the field to a soup kitchen where that we had emptied in the spring, in April, all our canned stuff that we'd canned up. And every bit of food we had, we throwed it all together to make soup and try to save the lives of the children. When the miners was blacklisted, 1,100 of them, for joining the United Mine Workers of America, and John L. Lewis had promised that he would see to us if the miners was blacklisted. Because the coal miners had made a pledge with each other they'd never work another union man. And John L. Lewis sold us out in 1925, and the union was broke. So these children was going to the soup kitchen, and all the tops of their little feet was busted open from the cold wind, and you could track them from the blood running down between their toes. They was barefooted and wearing little thin cotton shirts, and them all ragged and tore. And so they waked me, and I went to the door, and I asked my sister's little girl, Flossie, I said, "What are you doing with these children out here in the cold rain and them all naked and barefooted?" And she said, "Aunt Molly, some of these children have not had a bite to eat since day before yesterday. And I'm going to try to get them a warm bowl of soup at the soup kitchen." And my own little son, Henry Jackson, he said, "They won't have anything this morning, only gravy and cornbread," he said. "Can't you fix me a bite of something, Ma?" I said, "Henry, you know there's not a teaspoon of salt." I said, "According to my leadership, we all put the last teaspoonful of salt and soda even. It's all out there. You go and fare with the others. If they have anything in that soup kitchen, it's for everybody," I said. So he went on, and I sat down at the dining room table. And with the pains in my heart from the condition, as I often do, I composed a song of the condition of the people, which is the only kind of a song that is a folk song, is what the folks composes out of their really lives, out of their sorrow and out of their happiness and all.
I am a Union woman, as brave as I can be. I do not like the bosses, and the bosses don't like me. Join the NMU, join the NMU, join the NMU, oh, join the NMU. I was raised in old Kentucky, Kentucky born and bred. When I joined the NMU, well, they called me a Russian Red. Join the NMU, oh, join the NMU. Join the NMU, join the NMU. My husband asked the boss for a job, and these is the words he said. "Bill Jackson, I can't work you, sir, 'cause your wife's a Russian Red. Join the NMU, oh, join the NMU. Join the NMU, join the NMU. These is the worst times that I have ever saw. You get shot down by gun thugs, you get framed up by the law. Join the NMU, oh, join the NMU. Join the NMU, join the NMU. Our bosses ride fine horses and we walk in the mud. Their banner is a dollar sign and ours is striped with blood. Join the NMU, oh, join the NMU. Join the NMU, join the NMU. If you want to join a union as strong as it can be, join the dear old NMU and come along with me. Join the NMU, oh, join the NMU. Join the NMU right now, join the NMU.
The photograph you saw at the end was Rosalie Sorrells, the singer-songwriter who portrayed Miss Jackson. So now I'm going to turn the program over to Bonnie Nyman. And Bonnie is a UNISERV representative for the Pennsylvania State Education Association. That group is an affiliate of the National Education Association. And in her role with PSEA, Bonnie represents teachers, support staff, and even healthcare workers. She will be talking about the contributions that labor has made from which we've all benefited. And by the way, she happens to be my sister. I've known her whole life, and I'm very proud of her. So now I will turn it over to Bonnie.
Thanks for the introduction, Anne. I just want you to know I'm the younger sister. All right, Labor Day. Let's talk about Labor Day as it applies to union. So Labor Day means many things to us. It means hot dogs and fireworks and maybe even some backyard badminton. And even the word labor conjures up different images for different people. Many of us think of labor as workers. My daughter recently had a baby. She thinks of labor as childbirth right now. And for me, labor is about the union organizing movement. So I'm going to speak a little bit about that with you today to let you know the struggles that people have faced and how American life has been shaped by labor unions. We started as an agrarian culture here in the United States, but it didn't take long once manufacturing came into the industrial age came into the country. We switched over gradually to the point that by 1870, there were 3.2 million industrial workers. So that was a huge shift. You can see this chart, and I don't know how clearly you can see it, so I'm just going to talk about it. In 1840, 68% of the people were farmers. By 1930, almost 80% were factory workers. If you don't remember anything else from this presentation, remember these faces. These are the children that worked in mines and at looms. The reason they worked was because the wages were so poor for the people that worked in those factory jobs. These are breaker boys. These are children that worked in mines. These folks actually worked above ground until age 12, and then they went into the mines. But I want to talk about these folks. Between ages 8 to 12, they sorted coal as it came down those chutes. And I'll again describe it for you in case your screens are smaller than mine. Those boys sat in there all day long, and they sorted those lumps into like-sized coal pieces. They took out anything that was dirt. Their knuckles would often break if they weren't moving fast enough. The coal hit their knuckles. And these jobs were in Pennsylvania, in our coal region. And I've heard it said that when these people became men, because they weren't children forever, they became men, you could find them sometimes in the bars, and they couldn't even pick up their glass to their lips. They used to use their fist to hold their glass to drink. So those poor children had their lives changed forever. In addition to their knuckles breaking, they had respiratory issues for their lives because of the coal dust. And they often suffered hearing loss. So I want to just point out these children, they're standing on a loom there. And for people that say free enterprise is a good idea or laissez-faire, government hands off, before the government got involved, these children had jobs. So just think about that. And the government got involved because of labor movements. So in the 1800s, and in this specifically, I'm talking about 1830 to 1890, people worked 6 days a week, 11 and a half hours a day. They had low wages. The rents were high. They had company stores. They were forced to buy their goods out of the company stores. People were really in a crunch. Eventually, the workers responded by forming unions. They were few, scattered, and the first nationwide union was called the National Labor Union, and that formed in 1866. Then came along the Knights of Labor, and their goal was to unite everyone, skilled and unskilled workers, and they were in Pennsylvania in 1886. Pennsylvania is very key in all of this, as you'll notice as we go through. And they said, an injury to one is a concern to all. Their goals the Knights of Labor were an 8-hour workday, worker-owned factories, abolition of child and prison labor. That was another big thing that was happening. Equal pay for men and women. Back then, they were fighting for the rights of women and pay. And safety codes. On May 1st of 1886, there was something called the Haymarket Square Riot. And this really put an end to the Knights because it was such a problem. And the what they called anarchists set off a bomb and killed some policemen. Although this had nothing to do with the union, the public began to associate unions with radicalization and violence. Why? Some of this sounds familiar today. Corporations, which owned the newspapers, used their resources to turn public sentiment against the unions, and they had a formula. If you look at the bottom of the screen, the formula is unions plus violence plus strikes plus socialists plus immigrants equal anarchists. So they were pointing the finger at anarchists. Sounds familiar today. The first Labor Day is, here's a Labor Day parade. There's a little bit of dispute, so I'll say arguably, the first Labor Day parade was September 5th, 1882 in New York City. And this is a group of horseshoers from Kalamazoo, Michigan. The actual first Labor Day as a federal holiday came in by Grover Cleveland. And though the date has always varied, it's always in the beginning of September, but specifically not May 1st, which is an International Workers' Day, has been for a long time. And that has somewhat of Marxist roots, the International Workers' Day. But it's also the date of that riot I told you about, the Haymarket Riot. So that was deliberately avoided for our Labor Day. Many people in the labor movement believe it should be May 1st. Someone named Samuel Gompers, he was affiliated with the AFL, which is the American Federation of Labor. And he said, what does labor want? We want more schoolhouses, less jails, more books, less arsenals, more learning, less vice, more leisure, less greed, more justice and less revenge. In fact, more of the opportunities to cultivate our better natures. This is what we still want today. So back in 1886, they were fighting for the very same things we're fighting for today. However, management had most of the power, as you'll see by this slide. It's a joust between labor, who has a tiny little horse there, and the monopoly, which is the giant knight in shining armor. Who has the power? The person with the money. So it was a fight to gain recognition from employers. And labor fought back with the only weapons they had. The weapon of boycotts, sympathy demonstrations, informational picketing, organized strikes, and wildcat strikes, which are strikes where workers go out without the consent of the union. And management fought back with a group called Pinkertons, which were, I will call them hired thugs, and they did lockouts and blacklisting. And you heard some of that blacklisting before in the song that was in the previous presentation. So the union fought back with strikes, and I'll just mention a few of the bigger name strikes. This was the Homestead Strike in 1892. And I want to point out what an important event a strike is, and especially was. Every penny those people earned put food on their table. It was critical. So for them to walk away from their jobs and to go out on a collective action like that, a work stoppage, that was really a brave and courageous thing for them to do. So this was the Homestead Steelworks strike. That was in Pennsylvania. That was something that Andrew Carnegie owned, that steel mill. There was a Pullman strike, and that was all of the railway workers in 1894. And there was some deadly violence that happened there. This shows you where strikes were happening. The areas that are shaded in pink are where many counties reported strikes. And again, notice there in Pennsylvania, there's a real concentration of pink. So we can take a lot of union pride from this map right here, because that was quite a noble thing that they did to try to increase the workers' rights. And keep in mind that when union workers' rights were gained, all of society gains from that. It's everyone's buoyed up from that. So the song that was just on, the Bread and Roses song, that has its roots in the Lawrence, Massachusetts textile strike of 1912. These were people that worked looms, women, that's a place where women worked. Those mines and those steel mills were typically male jobs. Women worked in these looms. They stopped working when they received a reduction in pay. The government reduced their hours, which meant a reduction in pay for them. So they received their paychecks once their hours were reduced from 56 hours to 54 hours. And their paychecks had 32 cents less. So they averaged about $8.76 per hour is what I have in my notes. So 32 cents was a big portion of their wage that they lost. They stopped their looms. They stood silent next to their looms. Imagine how courageous that was for them to do when every penny mattered. So when the bosses came in and asked them, what's going on? Why are you stopping your looms? They said, not enough pay. Sure enough, eventually over time, all of the people from that factory left their looms and went outside. Now, what's especially significant about this group, these were immigrants. They didn't speak the same language necessarily, but they had a common goal. And that's the underlying point of all these unions, is that we're all in it together. We're one for all and all for one. So over time, as you see on that newspaper headline, Lawrence strike likely to be spread. By the end of January, more than 10,000 workers were out on strike. So they ate in soup kitchens. Once farmers heard about their situation, they sent food to them. They carried in food on trucks, donations. This is called the strike that shook America. And that ushered in labor's golden age. And here there's a picture you'll see of John L. Lewis, and on Aunt Molly Jackson's version, she said he sold them out. She said that their miners were blacklisted, and they were. And if you read John L. Lewis's biographies, you'll find that people loved him and people hated him. He made strides, yet nothing's perfect. And I always say that in union work, that the union isn't a magic wand. And in that case, they had people that really got trampled, but he was loved and he was hated. But soon we had the uplifting political kindness for labor. And we had the National Labor Relations Act in 1935. And there you can see Roosevelt signing it into law. That was a good day for labor. However, it wasn't too long before labor started to meet with opposition yet again. There were certain acts that came in, the Taft-Hartley Act, the Landrum-Griffin Act, and others that started to put restrictions on labor. And a big blow came in 1981, for those of you who can remember that, the Patco strike. And that, we're at a very poignant time for that strike because we just had the 40-year anniversary. So Friday was the 40-year anniversary of when the air traffic controllers went out on strike. Ronald Reagan famously said, "Get back to work or you'll be fired." So this is the anniversary today, the 5th of September, is the day when 1,300 controllers crossed the picket line and went back to work. 13,000 had been out on strike, so 10% of them went back to work, and the others were fired. So today's the 40th anniversary of that blow. I want to tell you a little bit, too, about the union I work for, PSEA. We're an affiliate of the National Education Association. Again, women didn't have, teachers were women for the most part, so there's a gender line here. In 1986, teachers went to Harrisburg, and they had illegal strikes that they called the chalk dust flu. They walked out without, you know, necessarily labor consent, so that would be considered a wildcat strike. And look at them there on the steps of the Capitol in Harrisburg, March 4th, 1968. As a result, in 1970, Act 195 was passed, and that gave rights for bargaining that were then enhanced in 1992 with Act 88. And they give us timelines for bargaining contracts for teachers and fact-finding deadlines. If things didn't go quite right, we could go to arbitration. So what I want to point out to you is that the Pennsylvania State Education Association fights for the rights of children. So do you remember those faces in the beginning of this presentation? The children that were minors. Well, now there are students, and the building on the right is PSEA in Harrisburg. The building on the left is the Capitol in Harrisburg. They are right across the street from one another. And we have a group I'm so proud of government relations people that spend most of their day across the street talking to different legislators, making sure that our children are front and foremost in the decisions that are made. No more child labor. Dignity for students and educators. Dignity for all people, all workers, all laborers. So when we have a bit of a backlash, we really need to think about what's happening. Because there is a backlash. Unions are under attack. Education unions are under attack. There are people that are trying to dismantle teachers' unions. There's some smiling faces up there on the screen right now. Some of them you may recognize. Two of them I'd say are national figures. The one that has the white shirt and with the white background, he's a state figure. He's the wealthiest man in Pennsylvania. And why are they working so hard to dismantle unions? They want students to be sent to charter schools, which have wealthy owners, privatization. It's padding people's pockets with tax money. Our members are receiving calls and emails and flyers from a group called Free to Teach that are trying to encourage them to leave the union. I always say, why are they trying so hard? So the fight continues, just like it was in the old days. We're still fighting today. The players just look a little different. So united we bargain, divided we beg. It's always been the same. It's the same today. And remember the faces of those children. They became men. And the dignity was won. We're continuing the dignity today for all people. This is my final slide. So I'm going to read the words at the bottom. I'm going to ask that you either speak them with your voice or say them in your head. With unity, forming a strong bond, we work together for the greater good. Thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. And that was really interesting. I didn't know a lot of that. One thing I forgot to mention as part of Bonnie's introduction is that she was on the Perky Yuma Valley School District School Board for 10 years. Some of you, I think, are in that district, so I thought it was relevant to throw that out there. And obviously, she's an advocate for children. And now we will have matters of the heart.
We'll go ahead and bring this time of sharing to a close by finishing Spirits of Life this week. Yes, we're getting a little double dose. And then we will continue on with the service.
Now, Manny McNeil will give us our closing words.
Today's closing words are by Jennifer Willett and are titled The Labor of Our Days. What images come to mind when I say Labor Day? Chances are you think of the holiday weekend and celebrations with your loved ones, the federal holiday, unions, and the cause of a working wage and benefits, maybe the history of the struggle of working people to have a fair share of the profits of their work. Those are all great. Now, I want you to think of your parents and caregivers, the parent that fed you, bathed you, nurtured, and taught the building blocks of how to be in the world. Now, think of your elders, Who shops for them, goes to the doctor with them, cleans for them, and cares for them when they begin to fail? Now, think of those who have physical and mental challenges of differing degrees. They come in all ages. Who assists them in the daily tasks that make day-to-day life easier and sometimes possible at all? Much of this work is unpaid labor, yet the work of housemaking, childcare, elder care, and the differently abled care isn't part of our economic system. It doesn't count on our GDP, but our society would collapse without it. Now consider the other non-paid labor we do to mentor, to educate, to assist, to advocate, to entertain and enrich the community, the country, and the world. Think of all that we do for our neighbors, our friends, our community to make life better. This is labor. A paycheck isn't the only measure of your work. Without this labor, our world would be a lonelier and more desperate place. Honor your labor. If you work for money, this holiday is for you. If you work for love, this holiday is still for you. Our work matters. Our work makes the world better. So enjoy your day. Thank you.
I extinguish this chalice, but not its light, which we take with us into our lives and into the world.
And now Jerry will give us our closing song.
Yes, thank you, Ann. I'm so pleased that Ann asked me to do the closing song this morning, and we picked a song that was composed by Woody Guthrie in 1940, although actually the music had been composed well over 100 years before by a classical composer, Robert Schumann. It was adopted into a popular song called Little Red Wing, and it was there was a young Indian maid. Well, Woody took that refrain and came up with "There Once Was a Union Maid." This apparently was in response, according to Pete Seeger, to a woman coming up to Woody and Pete after one of their union rallies and saying, "Why don't you sing more songs about women?" And so he sat down and composed this song. There's a lot going on in this song because it's appealing to women both to take the lead in the labor movement. And then thanks to Bonnie's presentation, I think we see just how important women were in the labor movement, but also to kind of play a supporting role as well with their husbands, because as Bonnie pointed out, some of the workforce, generally industrial and mining and so forth, were mostly men. So it was appealing to women to be both the leaders and also the supporters. But it also is sending out a message to men, kind of a psychological thing here. Hey, if this union maid can stand up to the goons and the ginks and the company finks and the deputy sheriffs and all these other forces, why can't you? And also giving them that little nudge that says, hey, your wives are behind you. The women are behind you. So there was a third verse added by one of the members of the Almanac group that Woody and Pete sang with, and the Almanac Singers. That's one that is a little bit outdated. So we're going to do both that verse, but a more modern verse. There have been several ones that were added, including one that refers to Molly Jackson, which, of course, we learned a little bit more about this morning. So here's the song, and I'd like you to join me on the chorus, if you would. And the chorus is pretty simple here because it's a lot of repetition. So it goes really like this, and I'll do it real slow. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die. There once was a union maid who never was afraid of goons and ginks and company finks and the deputy sheriffs who made the raids. She went to the meeting hall when a meeting it was called, and when those Legion boys came round, she always stood her ground. Oh, you
scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union till the day I die. This Union maid was wise to the tricks of company spies. She couldn't be fooled by company stool. She'd always organize the guys. Got her way when she struck for better pay. She'd show her card to the National Guard, and this is what she'd say. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union till the day I die. Gals who want to be free, take a little tip from me. Get yourself a man who's a union man and join the ladies' auxiliary. Married life ain't hard when you got a union card. A union man has a happy life when he's got a union wife. But here's the more up-to-date verse. Oh, you women who want to be free, take a little tip from me. Break out of that mold we've all been sold, and you've got a winning history. Ready for the last part? The fight for women's rights with workers must unite. Like Mother Jones, move your bones to the front of every fight. Oh, and say you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union. Till the day I die. How about one more time? Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union. Oh, well, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the Union. I'm sticking to the Union till the day I die.